Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
His butt puckered a little bit.
Yeah, I heard a clap.
Shout out.
But hey, welcome to Burrows of Murder, where battle upsets me.
No, I don't.
So what do we do here? We talk about true crime cases of color, we play music, and we just have a general good vibe. A lip-smacking vibe, right, Battle?
No, not at all.
But this episode, it's all about conspiracy, or how I like to say hotep shit, because that's just fun for me.
So. I didn't realize that's what you meant when you say hotep.
Oh yeah, I definitely think of something entirely different from hotep shit.
Nope.
Yeah, I thought you meant actual hotep shit.
Hotep shit? Is that like from...
Oh no.
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 It's more from...
Oh, I'm thinking emotep.
Yes. Yeah, I think of like the people on Instagram who like record videos in the grocery store talking about like there's negative ions in this fruit and it's causing you to like be less black and like it's poisoning your body.
Or my favorite internet hotep is that black guy in the woods who like scared that white woman by staring at her in a TikTok.
Yeah.
Have you seen that video?
he's got powerful eyes.
His energy. This is gonna be. I'm gonna edit this part out, but I have to show it to you. I'm gonna look it up right now. That video is insane. Like, the energy he exudes is just like powerful.
Oh no. I've been wondering who this person
is. Oh.
There is no such thing.
I have seen this.
Share this down.
That you're watching this video.
I can't hear it.
You are energetically aligned with me and this message.
Are his eyes real?
Create your reality.
I hope so.
Well, you already knew that, yet you still live a life that you dread.
Who screamed?
The woman. His aura just terrified her.
So I'm super excited about this episode. It's not a script. Conspiracy theories. I love them. Do you love them? So yeah, anyways. Get past all of that, sorry. I want to start this episode off with an abstract by Karl R. Popper. So, the conspiracy theory of society is just a version of theism, of a belief in gods where whims and wills rule everything. The conspiracy theory of society is very widespread and has very little truth in it. Only when conspiracy theorists come into power does, it becomes something like a theory which accounts for things which actually happen. The conspiracy theorists will believe that institutions can be understood completely as the result of conscious design and as collective. He usually ascribes it to them a kind of group personality, treating them as conspiring agents just as if they were individual men. As opposed to the view, the social theorists should recognize that the persistence of institutions and collectives create a problem to be solved in terms of an analysis of individual social actions and their unintended social consequences, as well as their intended ones. In all social situations, we have individuals who do things, who want things, who have certain aims. So, when you hear that abstract, what do you all think a conspiracy is?
I think that kind of little reading that you just gave for us really reminds me of the current politics today. That, like, you know, QAnon theorists weren't like mainstream until they became politicians, and then suddenly like they are allowed to kind of like color all of these institutions as having like agency. It kind of reminds me we talk about like maintaining the hegemony and stuff like that. Like, these are not conscious efforts by like villainous people in the background. It's something that everyone's like complicitly involved in, like the like anti-blackness within like POC communities. Like, it's like an evil thing that happens and everyone is involved with it. It's not just like, you know, some dude in a van who's like tricking all these young people to stop thinking about themselves in a positive way.
I got from it that it could be very easy to fall into a conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
It starts with convenient answers. Yeah, it starts with a question. Everyone, we're all human. You want your questions answered. And sometimes, even if it's a ridiculous answer, it may just be all you got. And you just latch onto it.
So then I guess, where do we find the line between MK Ultra and QAnon? Like, because there are legitimate conspiracies, and then there are just baseless, you know. I don't even have an adjective for it.
I think the line really just comes out after the fact. Like, the line gets shown when, like, the truth comes out.
Right.
Because, like, when you first hear MK Ultra shit, people thought it was just a conspiracy theory until, like, the truth came out, and they're like, oh, shit. Yeah. That's real.
Really,
that's
real crazy.
Yeah, they really did have men stare at goats. Like, that's.
I guess that's the difference between like an actual conspiracy and then a conspiracy theory. Like, when it becomes, the legitimacy comes with it becoming an actual conspiracy.
And then like the snowball effect just happens again, because then they're like, well, if that's true, what else is true?
Yeah. It's crazy too, because like a sense, like y'all are all in a sense right, because pretty much a conspiracy theory is just a belief that there's some covert but influential organization that's responsible for a certain circumstance or event or circumstances and events. So a big reason why there are a lot of conspiracy theories now or in general is because of bias. What happened? What'd I do?
No, my cat's
being noisy. Oh. Oh, I like cats.
You're cute. Editing Andre doesn't like cats.
But it's not just any type of bias, but as 538 puts, it's jumping to conclusions bias. But then again, that source comes from a site that is ran by Nate Silver, and that and its own can have its own bias, right? But we're not here to talk about Nate Silver today. We're here to talk about conspiracy. But it's interesting to think about how we can view each other when it comes to conspiracy theories. I know for me, for example, I don't follow them too much, and I have a hard time believing in conspiracy theories. But that can also be because of my background in the sciences. And a lot of times I have to be very analytical about the things that I research or the things that I do, because It has to be like fact driven about the things that I find versus things that could happen. It's like hearsay, right? Mm-hmm. So, nerd. Yes, I know.
I think that's the thing for me is like the thing that I always look at when examining conspiracy theories is how many people would it take to keep a secret? Because, like, that's the biggest thing with a lot of the ones that are so rampant now. Like when people talk about, like, doctors have the cure to cancer, but they're keeping it from us. Like, I don't genuinely believe that every doctor, could keep that secret.
Or, like, the moon landing is fake.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, but, it involves Russians calibrate their telescopes off of shit we left on the moon. And they would benefit from being able to call us out on lying about that.
And also, when it comes to conspiracy theories, a big question I like to ask is, why? Because a lot of these conspiracy theories are like, all right, yeah, no, but why would someone do that? And they never have an answer for you.
It's bias, and a lot of it's just bias, which I found to be true. But then again, it's my bias. It's so deep.
I mean, that's natural. Everything
we have. Jesus.
So tense.
Yeah, like, what do you have, like,
is that how stunt people flirt?
Yeah, my dick is dense.
Well, check out my density of this fluid, but whatever. So according to this research article called Thinking Preferences and Conspiracy Belief, Intuitive Thinking and Jumping to Conclusion Bias as a Basis for the Belief in Conspiracy Theories by Nico Daniel and Stephanie Mill. While there is to date no research concerning shared underlying cognitive underpinnings of belief in conspiracy theories and paranoid ideation, jumping to conclusion bias is something that may be the leading factor, as said before. And what does that actually mean, right? Essentially, what it is that despite of lack of evidence, even though we have a small amount of evidence, we jump to conclusion without having everything or knowing everything. So does it sound familiar of like what you know? I think everyone can be guilty of it, or everyone is guilty of it. And not only is it familiar, but at times we all fall victim to it. So today, as we go through cases, excuse me, as the team goes through cases, because I'm not giving you a case today, sorry. Try to listen. I want to challenge our listeners and you all too to try to listen and see if you're able to distinguish where the fallacy in the conspiracy cases that will be presented today lie. With that being said, K-Money, we're gonna pick this shit apart and figure out what's going on. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Okay. So, mine is a little weird. I decided to read The Turner Diaries. Didn't finish it because it was hella fucking painful, but took a lot of notes and read a lot of articles and stuff.
She Charlie date it.
Oh my god, you can't see the paper. I have so much shit.
You're on a watch list for sure.
Oh, I am. Absolutely. Thankfully, I didn't have to buy the book because I would not have spent money on that. But, so I guess the whole thing is the Turner Diaries has been cited in a lot of different, like, white supremacist actions. Like, as I'm sure you're familiar with, Timothy McVeigh is one of the biggest ones. Which, just a quick overview, ironically, if people don't know, I would imagine they do. But in 1994, I believe, he bombed the Oklahoma City FBI building. And they found pages of this book in his car. And they also, he had, a week prior to bombing the building, told his sister that something big was going to happen and shipped her, or sent her in the mail, a few pages out of the book. There are other terrorist organizations and terrorist actions that resulted from people who had read this book. So
it's kind of scary, like, how a book could be that
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sparked a lot of debate on censorship, because if a book can incite that level of violence, I mean, the thing too about the Oklahoma City bombing is that it directly mirrors one of the events in the book, down to the way in which the bombing happened, how the bomb was made, and that kind of stuff. So, oh, and then the other thing, the terrorist group called themselves the Order in, I believe, the 80s, which was, they directly took the name from the organization in the book. The overall organization, the terrorist organization in the book, is called the Organization, but their elite forces are called the Order. So that was a direct pull from the book. And I guess the overview is essentially...
So I haven't read the Turner Diaries. Like, is this a nonfiction book? Is this a fiction book that inspired people?
It's a fiction book. So the I was going to pull up the synopsis real quick. But it's essentially, it takes place, well, there's different things. I think there's different versions of it. It takes place in mine in 1981, but in like other versions, it's 1991. But essentially, there's some big... day of, like, the government takes everyone's guns away, and he ends up being radicalized by that, especially when a few years later he is found to be continuing to own guns even though they're completely illegal. And the concept is, like, because of liberation, like women's lib and black liberation movements, like, I guess they think that things are flipped. So the way that, like, we view black people being treated in our country today, that's the way that they view white people being treated. So it's like almost the exact opposite. And their whole thing is not...
That's so weird how...
Mm-hmm.
No, sorry.
No, you're fine.
That's so weird how they think that white people think that it's them being treated the way people of color are being treated.
Mm-hmm.
When if we look at the majority of,
like, how the tables have turned,
the world is white. And be clear, everyone that's listening, white people doesn't just mean white Americans. Like, the world is white. Like, the world is white.
Well, I mean, it all starts with...
looking for was Eurocentric.
Eurocentric, okay.
Biggest colonizers being the British. I mean, the fact that we have the phrase that, like, the sun never set on the British Empire, I feel like should demonstrate the entire reach of, like, whiteness and white supremacy and all that. I mean, all of the places that were colonized by the British have suffered greatly while the British took their resources. So, but yeah, it's just... the thing that's crazy is, like, they see themselves as the victim, the way, like, subjugated and marginalized, the way that black people have actually been in our country. And I think the most interesting thing is, like, the difference there, though, is, you know, marginalized groups now, they want equality, they want justice, whereas white people who see themselves as a victim, they don't want that. They want to dominate. They want power at the expense of everyone around them. They see it as, or at least in the book, these, you know, neo-Nazis and all that, they see the rights being wronged as dominating over other groups.
The kind of, like, loss of privilege equals oppression.
Exactly, yeah.
That's a good one. I like that.
I can't call the N-word anymore out in public. Damn, my rights.
Exactly.
Like, bro, okay, all right.
Well, it's coming from people who think that they're, like, superior. Like, actually, like, you want me to, like, debase myself by treating someone who's less than me as equal?
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's thinking about looking at how the South is right now when it comes to Confederate monuments, and they're just like, oh, they're taking a part of history away. And it's like, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, I recently saw a TikTok that was equating the defacement of, I don't know if that's a word, but it is for now, of the George Floyd statue that they just put up. I don't remember where it was, but I think we all saw it at some point. It's like, it almost looks like paper, where he's got the different levels that make his face. Someone defaced it. And I remember seeing this person on TikTok making the argument of, well, what do you expect when we've taken down all of these Civil War monuments? And it's like, how can you equate these two things? One of them was a victim. The other were like oppressors. Yeah.
Was that person saying it in a way that they're defending the Confederacy, or were they saying it like, well, yeah, it happened because other people were taking down the, like, you know what I mean? Because like, if I see or like monuments going up like that, I expect it to get vandalized because people that have this super crazy tie to like Confederate or racist monuments are going to be like, fuck this, they took our statues down, so I'm going to do the same thing. So did he mean it that way, or did that person mean it that way, or the other?
No, it was more like I see what you're saying, but I don't think that they were doing it in the way that it's like, well, yeah, that's their retaliation. It was more like, well, of course, because you don't respect their monument, yeah, so why would they respect yours? Which it's like apples and oranges.
Well, yeah, it's the total lack of understanding of context. Like, even just the fact that these statues did not go up after the Civil War. Like, the majority of them went up during the, like, 70s and, like, late 60s. You know, and you even had people like General Lee who said, like, yeah, I don't think we should have statues for the Confederacy. I think we should, like, try to heal the country. Like,
yeah, that's the most ironic part, is like that he specifically...
Big OG guy.
Yeah, he specifically said he didn't want...
But it doesn't glorify their fucked up ass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many statues?
It's not like they have...
About that shit. That's not my business.
Actually, that's interesting. There, let me see if I can find it. There is a quote in here specifically about Germany. He says,
what's happening now is reminiscent of the media campaign against Hitler and the Germans back in the 1940s. Stories about Hitler flying into rages and chewing carpets. Phony German plans for the invasion of America. Babies being skinned alive to make lampshades and then boiled down into soaps. Girls kidnapped and sent to Nazi stud farms. The Jews convinced American people that...
Stud farms?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Jews convinced the American people that those stories were true, and the result was World War II. With millions of the best of our race butchered by us, and all the Eastern and Central Europe turned into a huge communist prison camp.
Wow, so they're like full mask-off Nazi. Oh my god. They're Holocaust-denying Nazis. How?
Wig snap.
Like, that's such a weird, like, intersection of people who are like, yeah, obviously the Third Reich was real, and like, but they didn't do any of that stuff.
Well, yeah. And the thing, too, that I find the most interesting is that a lot of the stuff, and this is, I just want a disclaimer that a lot of these things are just things that I notice and, like, I don't know. Anyway, but, like, a lot of the stuff in this book are things that I hear is, like, the same thing that, like, you know, the conservative talking heads say. The only difference, in my opinion, is that the things that talking heads say, yeah, it's much, this is much more overt, whereas the things that they say are much more watered down in a way that's more palatable to the average person. Because I feel like, yeah, the average like person who watches that stuff, if you sit there and say, well, we need to do what the Nazis do, they're going to be like, meh. But if you, like, code it and,
if you have, like, Ben Shapiro saying, well, Megan Thee Stallion isn't an artist, and she can't sing about a WAP. We can't have people like that representing us.
Or Tucker Carlson, I think, is, like, the biggest example. Like, he talks about white replacement theory all the time, that whites are being replaced in the United States by, like, the boogeyman that is, like, mixed-race people.
Yeah. And then you got... And then you have people like Candace Owens shucking and jobbing for a... for a bill.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just, like... Well, and it's just... It's some of the same arguments today that, that this book makes. Like, I mean, it was written in 78. It was actually a part of a newspaper series in a neo-Nazi publication, but then they turned it into a book that you could, like, mail order. And one of the things that they talk about is that the government's going to make this passport system so that they can track you. What does that sound like?
COVID tonight.
Oh yeah, you're gonna put a chip in your arm.
Like, well, exactly, because they specifically say.
And I'm saying like, oh, you're gonna have the chip in your arm, bro. Bitch, don't you have an iPhone? They're tracking you anyway.
Exactly. Well, and that's the thing too, because even in 1978, we had social security cards, we had credit cards. Like, we're already being tracked. You know, like, to sit here and say, well, now you have to have a passport with a magnetic strip. Like, they already know what we're doing. There's already a paper trail. You know, to sit there to say, like, yeah, we're gonna have to
get to hear our episodes before anyone else. Unedited.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to the CIA listening now.
All four of them. They had their own gang.
Do you think they have their own Zoom meeting where we all meet?
We'll talk about that afterward.
These son of a bitches.
Coaching
everyone. I like to think they're fans.
And the other interesting thing is they also talk about that in the book specifically, so they are as like a self-admitted terrorist organization. And what they're trying to do is, one of the things that they're trying to do at least, is they are doing these acts of terror and killing people so that the government has a knee-jerk reaction and becomes more oppressive, because they believe that if they make the government, if they force the government's hand to be more oppressive to protect people, more people will sympathize with them. Because, like, they're pushing the government to do the thing that they don't want it to do. I mean, like, when they think about, like...
using the government to radicalize the youth.
Exactly. Yeah. Or radicalize the people who are on the fence. You know what I mean? Like, Fox News.
God. Fox Soul is even worse. I don't know why they're there. Why are you there? And why is it called Fox Soul? And why is it all purple? I see what you're trying to get. You're not going to get me, Fox.
I've never even heard of that. What is Fox Soul?
It's just Fox for black people. That's literally what Fox Soul is.
Oh, God.
And that's why they call it...
I've never heard of that.
That's why they call it Fox Soul, and that's why everything's purple and everyone's black. Because that's what Fox thought. Like, oh, you know what black people love? Soul food. We're going to make it on a Sunday, too.
And I also... So one of the other things that I find interesting about the book is, like... I don't know how to articulate this as well as I would like, but it's, like, a lot of the ways that they view things are, like, in a sense, we're kind of two sides of the same coins, like, the things that we all fight for and the things that they all fight for. The difference, like, or at least in the ways in which we, like, view that stuff, the difference is, like, people like us want to help others, whereas what they're trying to do is, like, the opposite. Like...
Return to... traditionalism and keep everyone quiet and like submissive.
Well, yeah, because like they sit there and say, well, the average American is just like kind of like not really tuned in. Like they seem to think that liberalism is just people not caring. Like they're just going along with the flow, which is ironic because like I think that it's quite the opposite even still today. Like, it's easy to be... The status quo is more this conservatism that we have, in at least in our country.
Yes. I think, like, the moderates in the United States are very far right.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
to other, like, OCD nations.
Because, I mean, even the left is right.
Yeah.
I mean, in, like, compared to other people's politics.
Compared to others, the left is, like, pretty moderate.
Yeah.
So it's like they think all the same things that we think about them, but the difference is that they are
values.
Specifically divisive. Yeah, the core values are what changes, because the thing I find the most interesting is like with everything that happens, like with, you know, last year, like the protests and all those things, like we are trying to like help as many people as possible, whereas like the things like in this book, I mean, even like what Timothy McVeigh did in real life, they would rather sacrifice their own to an end. Yeah, like they're not, at the end of the day, it's all about individualism, and if they have to like kill their own people, they will.
I'm so curious about that book and I kind of want to read it.
Well, I mean, shout out to Kelly for sitting through so
taking
much conservative fan
fiction.
I didn't
for this episode.
Yeah, she didn't go off the deep end yet.
It just like hurts my brain. I was
well. So, do you think that there's like anything of value that like can be gotten from the book? This like, you know, this, you know, white oppression conspiracy theory.
I think. See, I don't know, because it's like, I think it's valuable to understand why they believe what they believe. But like, I think once you get to this level, like that, there's no turning back. Yeah. Right. Because like, I mean, I've had plenty of debates with people who don't consider themselves this far, but still, that's the thing.
It's like, around that.
Yeah. And like, the level of cognitive dissonance is astounding, and like denial of facts or statistics, because there's always like, you can always fucking look some bullshit up that supports your argument on the internet. And that's like part of the problem, is that we've let so much
and then it's hard to distinguish between like fact versus fiction.
Exactly.
And like, you're trying to say like, you're gonna argue with somebody about this shit, and like, you'll source your material from like from academia. You have like a legitimate source. It'll be like, well, academia is against this too. It's like, so everyone's against you, huh? That's like, you're that deep.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't directly tell you that you're right, it means everyone else is against you.
Well, I mean,
it's strange. It's like the people at the top of the pyramid see all these people who like want to get to the top of the pyramid, and they're like, well, they're clearly conspiring against me and I'm oppressed.
Yeah.
Like, motherfucker, what?
Well, I mean, and that's the thing too, is like, that is the most successful tool of white supremacy that exists, is that it is so divisive among like all the lines that we consider intersectional. They're so good at breaking those things apart and like making it so that you don't trust stuff. I mean, you know, divide and conquer and all that.
Right. Well, and like the amount of, you know, liberal neo-Nazis who are like, well, yes, you know, white queer person, or yes, white woman, like, you were oppressed at one point, but now you're not. And all these people are trying to take away your rights, and they're going to make you oppressed by giving them equality.
Mm-hmm.
Like the tools of white supremacy can be used like to attack people who are also, you know, marginalized, at the fear of losing more.
Yeah, fear mongering goes a long way. Oof. Yeah.
But on that, yeah, there's so many
dips and crevices. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so on that note, we'll take a small break.
And now, a short commercial break.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, so Robert, we kick us off, because mine's like more murder-esque. So, well, okay. It's directly murder.
I really like that, Kelly.
Yeah.
Okay,
I'm so curious to hear more. Like, to be honest with you,
we should do a series where Kelly just reads the whole book.
I'll just do book reports from now on. This is like my second one. I didn't read the first one.
We'll do audiobooks, but we just shit on it the whole time.
Oh, I would love that. I have so many from Audible that I
feel like doing this whole thing the whole time, I just felt like that dude from Ancient Aliens. I'm just like, aliens. Oh, my brain is mush.
So there are actually some like crossovers from what you were saying with my case. So mine is set during the 1980s with Ronald Reagan as president. But oh, for a little bit of
broke. That's Nixon.
So for a little bit of background information, the United States has always had a war, you know, with like left-leaning ideologies, communism, socialism. Like, we have gone to war many times protecting, like, you know, our ideals on the global scale. And in the 1980s, one of the biggest points of contention for that ongoing conflict was in South America. There were two groups that we're going to be talking about today called the Sandinistas and the Contras. So the Sandinistas were a left-leaning organization that were, you know, akin to like Che Guevara and like other communists in South America. So when the Sandinistas came to power, there was a rebel group that was fighting them, that was against them, called the Contras. So the United States saw this group, you know, as fighting for, you know, American ideals in South America, South and Central America, that, you know, they would not have to directly go to war with any of these nations. They wouldn't have to put U.S. troops on the ground, but they could support the destabilization of, you know, a left group. So this was all in Nicaragua. The Sandinistas were the current government. So the United States began supporting this rebel organization to destabilize the Sandinista government. And that aspect of it isn't a conspiracy theory. There's no kind of ifs, ands, or buts about that. The United States, or in the early, late 70s, did give money to the Contras to aid in their fight against communism. The kind of vibe in the United States at the time was like, we have a lot of suffering that's happening, and I don't think we should be giving money to like random rebel groups. So, you know, U.S. government actually introduced called the Bolin Act, kind of a moratorium on giving these people money. So the Central Intelligence Agency, they were still heavily involved with funding the Contras or giving aid to the Contras. They were just no longer allowed to give them money, but the Contras still had to be, you know, outfitted. They still needed weapons. They still needed money to be able to fight the Sandinistas. The way that happened was through less than legal means. So fast forward a little bit, there was an article, a series of articles that was released to the San Jose Mercury News by a reporter called Gary Webb. The name of the series was Dark Alliance. And this is actually one of the first examples of like news going viral. So Gary Webb was able to find a few CIA assets. And so that kind of language is very important here. You know, you have employees of the CIA or CIA agents, and then you have CIA assets. But so those are people who are working directly with the CIA, but aren't like, you know, being paid directly.
So like,
or
like contractors?
Well, so they don't actually get money, but they're like
informants.
It's kind of similar to an informant, but like, so the Contra assets were people who were, you know, doing illegal things necessarily, like operating outside of the U.S. government, but the CIA was helping them occasionally, being like, okay, well, here's some of our intelligence that you can use. So giving them, you know, non-monetary resources. You know, later we'll see that the CIA really walks the line with asset versus agent. So Gary Webb, he finds a few of these assets who, you know, like there's this guy who was picked up selling drugs in LA, and he was held at an intake facility. And he said, hey, I need to make a call. And then he made a call to allegedly Quantico, and then he was released. So the conspiracy there is that this drug dealer made a call to someone in the CIA, and the CIA was like, yes, he's one of our assets, release him. And then he would continue to sell drugs. So Nicaragua obviously had a lot of cocaine that came out of it. So one of the ways that the Contras, this illegal rebel group, was able to make money to fight the Sandinistas was by selling cocaine. However, the United States at the time was kind of flooded with cocaine at the current demand. So because, you know, the only people who could afford cocaine because it was so expensive were very wealthy, the amount of buyers for cocaine was kind of low. You know, it was only like, you know, wealthy Wall Street people, you know, celebrities. So around this time, you know, there's no exact dates that crack came onto the scene, everyday people, you know, in, you know, projects and things like that, found out how to make crack cocaine. Or freebase cocaine. So, you know, doing some like backyard chemistry, they were able to make it.
I want to interject.
Super strong.
I heard the term freebasing before. I thought it meant like base jumping.
Oh, freebase?
Yeah. So when I went to Mountain Warfare School, you had to like scale, like ascend and descend like a 60-foot cliff. I'm descending it, and then I shouted out, "I'm freebasing," because I thought that freebasing meant.
Oh.
And everyone kind of just like, when I got down to the ground, everyone was like, what did you say? I was like, oh, I said I was freebasing. And they're like, you do crack? And I was like, no. the ball, and now I was baiting him out.
So crack cocaine essentially is, you know, much more addictive, much stronger, but it's cocaine. It's just a new way to do cocaine. But because it can be made in like such large quantities and like sold for so cheap, it became very popular in poor communities. So again, this part of the of our kind of discussion is not conspiracy. The crack epidemic of the 80s is well documented. It destroyed communities, specifically in Los Angeles and all, you know, East Coast too, but like LA is kind of like ground zero for like the crack epidemic. So there were politicians. I think the most notable one is Maxine Waters. She has been doing incredible work for years and years and years. She reads this article by Gary Webb that is saying like, hey, the CIA is helping these people who are selling drugs. And I think it's because they're aiding Contras. He's making those connections. He didn't directly call anybody out or like say anything overtly, but the tone of the piece is the United States government is allowing drug dealers to come into the United States to fund a war in South America. She kind of starts this community organizing campaign of how much of this is true. We need to get to the bottom of this. What is going on? All of this leads to a CIA investigation done by the Attorney General. So at the time, the Attorney General, you know, he is the person who is supposed to, like, you know, be the checker of the CIA. So it's not like the CIA investigating themselves, but it's kind of like the U.S. government checking itself, you know? And the findings that, you know, the Attorney General came back with was the CIA did not have any operatives directly engaged in the drug trade.
And hey, are you selling crack in here?
No. So, and that's when we get back to this discussion of operative versus asset. So they, when he testifies in front of Congress, including Maxine Waters, they're like, okay, so of the assets, do you know, were any of them drug dealers? And they say, yes, we know that there are rumors that many of them were engaged in the drug trade. And they're like, well, did you investigate any of those rumors? And they said, yes, we investigated some of the rumors. So it's when I watch the testimony that they gave, it's very much them saying, we knew that some of them were engaging in the drug trade. We investigated some of them, and some of them were not engaged in the drug trade. It is not our policy to work with drug dealers. However, even though we did.
But.
Yeah. And, you know, major drug dealers in LA have testified and said, all of the drugs that I got came from Nicaraguans. At that time, I bought all of my cocaine that I turned into crack from Nicaraguans. I don't know who those people were on, but they were always around and they always had cocaine. So this is where we kind of step into the conspiracy aspect of, you know, we've seen it 1,000 times, like joked about that the CIA planted crack cocaine in the inner city, which is that true? Kind of debatable. Did they allow crack cocaine to be sold in the United States? Yes. They knew that drug dealers that they were working with were bringing drugs in and out of the United States. And instead of like passing those names and stuff along to appropriate authorities to have them arrested, they potentially turned a blind eye while they did those things. And the guy, Gary Webb, who wrote this article, Dark Alliance, Gary Webb?
No, kind of cool. Dark Alliance.
Oh, Dark Alliance. Yeah,
Gary Webb.
Gary Webb.
Gary.
Like, it kind of reminds me of like Spider-Man, I guess. But...
Gary Webb, yeah, that's badass, man.
So Gary Webb's career kind of fell apart at that point. You know, all the major news articles kind of did hit jobs on his piece, and they were like, you know, this is not good reporting, like it doesn't have enough details. His defense of this was like, okay, well, I am a single journalist who is trying to track the CIA in a foreign country. How much evidence do you realistically like expect me to be able to get? But a direct result of Dark Alliance was the Attorney General's investigation. So like in that aspect, it was a very successful article. You know, it was used as like a touchstone for people like Maxine Waters to like rally the community to like get some answers about what was happening on U.S. soil.
It did its job, basically.
Yeah. So Gary Webb would go on to commit suicide later, allegedly. There are many people, and this goes into the like conspiracy aspect who believe he was suicided by someone. Okay, yes, okay. So Gary Webb was found dead in his apartment by self-inflicted gunshots, plural, to the head.
Gunshots?
Yes. So he had two gunshots to the head.
They didn't even try to hide. Did the CIA fuck up the first one and it just kept going?
Yeah. The death was ruled a suicide. And there's lots of people who don't agree with that, you know, who said, like, you know, someone kills themselves, they don't typically do two shots.
Remember that case that I covered a few episodes
ago? Oh, yeah.
It was the same thing. Where, yeah, he was found dead in the desert and with multiple gunshot wounds, and he killed himself. It's like...
Shit wasn't that, no.
Yeah.
Something the book ain't clean.
Yeah. So, this has all been a very roundabout way of saying I believe that the CIA is complicit in the crack epidemic in the United States. You know, I don't necessarily think there's like men in suits showing up with, you know,
suitcases
full of crack, like, hey, young kid, new drug for you, here you go. But it was like, you know, hey, so-and-so is coming through town, please don't pick them up. They're going to be, you know, flying into this airbase and they're going to be leaving behind some packages. Don't look inside them.
Oops, I just dropped some crack. Hope no one picks it up and smokes it.
Yeah. It's so crazy how, like, our own government sabotages us, especially the poorest, or, like... Yeah. But I mean, like, I guess that's obvious.
Well, and the most fucked up part about this for me is that, you know... The U.S. government decided, you know, we can't be giving money to, like, some foreign group to, like, do all this stuff, like, with our tax dollars, because that's going to hurt the average American. So instead, what we're going to do is we're going to forcibly extract money from poor communities with addiction to do the exact same thing. So it was a way of taking the financial burden off of the entire nation and putting it on vulnerable communities.
And then putting back into, this is another conspiracy theory, putting back into the prison system, the private prison system.
Well, yeah, because it's free labor.
The war on drugs. Damn.
Oh, yeah. Also, the war on drugs during this exact same period, there was like a 1 to 100 rule. So if you were found with 1 gram of cocaine, you'd be treated with X sentence, mandatory minimum. But if you were found with 1 gram of crack, it would be treated as 100 grams of cocaine.
Which I don't understand, because isn't crack just the solid form?
It's activated, so I am not a chemist, I do not understand, but the term freebase comes from adding like certain chemicals to cocaine to free the base of it and make it smokable. Only if you're in a mountaineering group.
Is it, like, it hurts my brain that, like, they're fucking pumping drugs into these communities and then, like, declaring a fucking war on them. Like, it's just,
yes. Because they didn't want to declare war on communists in Central and South America. They said, instead, we'll just go to war with black people.
In our own country.
And then we can put them in private prisons. We got cheap labor. We'll start.
And then we can use that to, like, perpetuate all of the worst stereotypes about the black community and destroy any economic.
And also around this time too is at a time period where judges would offer people they can go to prison or you can join the army.
Interesting.
It's happening around the exact same time. They stopped it afterwards. People were like, hey, that's kind of fucked up. You're forcing people to join a boy prison time instead of having people want to do it.
It also reminds me kind of what you were talking about at the very beginning. Battle was that, like, you know, was it conspiracy where these people, like, I'm going to, like, make people addicted in the inner city? No, probably not. But it was an unintended consequence of something else. Yeah.
And they were willing to be like, oopsie.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
It's not even like that. It's just like, well, we don't really give a shit about these people, so fuck them.
Yeah. Collateral damage.
Yeah.
Shit. Well, so moving on, mine is it's conspiracy. It's pretty gay, and it's also pretty spooky in a weird way.
I like all of those things.
Thank you. So now, was it you, Battle, who hates unsolved mysteries, or do you hate missing people?
Oh, like in general, or
yes, I do hate unsolved mysteries. In general, I don't like the unsolved anxiety. Mysteries. Like, I don't like it, makes me so uncomfortable, especially in the digital age. Yeah.
You really don't hate this because it has to do with a lot of those things. So now, nothing is more mysterious than an unsolved murder. Battle could attest to that. And some unsolved murders leave a wake of questions. Like, how did a body get into a suitcase? How to get mummified? Who is this man? All those questions will be answered partially by the end of my piece.
Only half answered.
Yeah, we're not going to get all of them, but we're going to get some. So now, my case is about Doreen Corey, who was a transgender black drag performer from New York. She was from Buffalo, New York, and she was born in Franklin Leg, and really just had as average of a life that a transgender black woman in the 1940s could have. She was raised on a farm, and she performed drag while living in Buffalo. So now in the 50s, Doreen worked as a window dresser and then saved up some money and moved to New York to go to school for design. In 1960s, she actually toured as like a high profile snake dancer. And one of the places she performed at was called the Pearl Box Cabaret. That's like one of her main drag spots. She was one of four performers who also appeared in a performance in 1972 called Call Me Mister. She also founded her own voguing house called the House of Corey. And if you aren't aware of what a voguing house is, it's where a lot of like drag performers go to perform drag, practice, be around their own people and community safely. You know, for a lot of those people, it becomes like a second family or just a family in general.
And it's a lineage thing.
Oh yeah,
so like a drag performer will say, "I am so and so of house so and so,"
and they have a drag mother and stuff like that. And
yeah. kind of like how Game of Thrones has houses.
I did not know that,
like House of Targaryen
but with even more flair.
Yeah. Much better costuming.
The House of Corey held over 50 grand prizes from voguing balls. She was a house mother to a drag performer called Angie Extravaganda, who later had her own house startup and was featured in Paris is Burning, which is a great, just queer movie. Doreen Corey was actually depicted in Paris is Burning. That's how like poppin' she was and like important to drag performance in New York. She ran and designed a clothing label called Corey Design, and at one point she had this crazy performance where it involved her wearing a 30 by 40 foot feather cape. During the performance, she would shed down her costume to a sequence body stocking. Two attendants would then raise up the cape on poles, and the whole feather cape would drape the audience like a giant tent with her in the center. It sounded like a fucking amazing ass thing to see. Just imagine seeing a woman come out in a full feather costume and then that costume turns into a tent that you're under. Take my money. So now, 3 years after the movie Paris is Burning was released, Corey did die of AIDS-related complications. And her extensive costume collection was just up for grabs. So now the main person, Lewis Taylor, was her caregiver and just took care of her in her, you know, sickly times. And she and a friend went to her apartment to pick up some clothes for Halloween. So they went to Corey's apartment to sort their clothes, and in the back of her large closet was a large trunk. They pulled out that large trunk. It was heavy. They opened it up, and there was a bunch of, like, garments over top of it, but they couldn't figure out why it was so heavy. So they're removing layers and layers of garment, and she finds this big, huge Ziploc bag. So she had trouble with the zipper of the bag and got a pair of scissors. She took the scissors, cut it open, and was immediately hit with like a horrible smell. So they all left out the room, you know, got some air, came back in, ripped it open, and inside was the body.
How big was the Ziploc bag?
It was a big ass bag. Big ass Ziploc bag. I'm using the word Ziploc. Not Ziploc bag, but it's like a big plastic bag.
Oh, okay.
Inside of a trunk with clothes on top of it filled with baking soda. So they called the police right away. And in the article that I read about from that time, they interviewed her and she said, I called the police and I walked out. I couldn't look at the shit. I didn't want to. So the...
Yes.
Yeah, no, I get it. So now the body was also... So within the trunk, under the blankets, in the plastic bag, beneath the baking soda, the body was also wrapped in saran wrap. And this was just to cover up the smell of decay from escaping the trunk. That's why all that shit was on there. So now at the time, the unidentified person was only wearing a t-shirt and boxers. The body was so decayed that authorities... had to actually, it was like they got like an acid-based solution to get rid of all the shit on the fingers, and then they use some type of resin to plump it up so they can get a partial fingerprint just to like try to identify who it was. But everything that they did worked, and they got a partial print. The police were able to identify the person as a person named Robert Bobby Worley, who had prior convictions for rape and assault, among other things. He had like a huge history of just being like a kind of a shit. Worley had last been seen by his family in 1968. So now, clues found on the body, being like a vintage beer can lid, suggested that the dead body was at least 15 to 25 years old. So he's 15 to 25 years old. So they estimated They estimated that he was in that trunk for at least 15 to 25 years.
Oh. He wasn't was 15 to 25 years old.
No. He was a grown man, but the body was dead. He was dead. Yeah. He was dead before 15 to 25 years. And he was mummified, and they said that he was mummified. He was mummified due to the fact that he was wrapped in saran wrap, and then the bacon soda was pressed on top of him. So there wasn't that much like oxygen getting.
Moisture.
Oh, yeah. So it kind of perfectly preserved him in a weird, morbid way. But still, no one knew, like, how they got into connection to each other, who he was. Her friends never heard of a Robert Bobby Worley. They don't recall Doreen ever bringing him up or anything like that.
Was he known around the scene?
No.
Like,
was he... He had no connection to drag whatsoever. So now some of Corley's fellow drag queens speculated that he was shot in a failed robbery. So that's what their first thought was, that he was shot in a robbery. However, a report from a New York magazine at the time was able to dig up some clues to their relationship. They found out that, so they got in contact with his family finally, and his brother told him that Bobby called him while drunk once and rambled about a girl named Doreen that he just got into a fight with. Lewis Taylor also told reporters that Doreen actually wrote a short story about a transgender woman who killed her lover in revenge after he pressured her to have a sex change. And they said that when you read it, probably, it kind of was like,
you know, dating on the low.
Yeah. So then the only people who would have answers are dead. So that's kind of where the story ends. Well, it is where the story ends. We have no answers. But I am curious to see what are you guys' speculations on it. I'll go battle.
I don't know what I think. I need more. Like, I don't like this. I don't know if Doreen killed him.
Yeah, history.
But then, like, he was a bad person, right?
Yeah, he's not the nicest person.
Like, so I don't know. Like, Doreen, she died of natural cause. Well, yeah, she died of natural causes because it was natural to her. So,
his body,
like,
he did have a bullet wound.
That's okay.
I wish I forgot to mention. He died via gunshot. Yes.
Okay. Robert had a bullet wound. Well, like they said in Chicago, he had it coming.
Yeah, I think that's probably the most likely scenario, is that they were dating because he was, you know, potentially pressuring her to get a sex change.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he got violent and it somehow ended with him being shot. Because we know that this is a person who has a history of violence, so that, you know, and I don't think we know that about
her. No, no history of Doreen ever be like...
He even has a history of sexual assault, so, like...
Kelly, what do you think?
Right.
I mean...
Yeah.
I don't know, but I have a tendency to think that whatever it was probably justified.
Especially with his history, like...
Yeah, well, and that's what makes me think it's not, like, a robbery gone wrong. Because, like, if the person was...
Why would it be in his underwear?
Right, exactly. If they were robbed and shot, like, best way to get away with that is just leave the body and take off.
Or if it was in...
Don't touch it. But
where were his clothes? Where was the rest of his clothes?
No, it was just him in a t-shirt underwear. Which is why I'm thinking that it probably... Because they didn't specify... The brother didn't specify when he called him. They just didn't seem since, like, 1968. So, like, 15, 25 years prior.
Imagine keeping that with you that fucking long.
And that's why I think it was, like, a lover's thing. I think that her short story was, like, very true. He pressured her at this sex change. They got into the argument. He called his brother out the argument drunk. They probably got into, like, a drunken fight, which wound up, you know, him getting shot. And she just, instead of wanting to, you know... But at times, too, she probably knew that... She would go to jail for this.
Yeah, I was gonna say, on one hand, like, when you conceal a body, you are guaranteeing that you will be found guilty for murder. Okay, yeah. But, like, considering, like, where she was and the times, like, I don't,
even
like,
if we, even
that
if,
would
even
be
if
a bit
said,
risk
yeah,
to,
yeah.
Yeah, to say even if it was self-defense.
Because she still would get the most likely get the book
bonus. Yeah, well, because they always try to use people's differences as like a cause for their actions or whatever. I mean, like the whole thing with the staircase, they tried to use
right now it's hard for like transgender people to go to prison. Like they have to be like secluded in like their own self for their own safety. So imagine what it was like back then.
Yeah.
I would say if they even made it. Yeah.
So I really think it was like, you know, he got violent with her. It was self-defense. And instead of going to the police, decided just to hide the body. I'm just very curious of why she didn't like set up some type of contingency of getting rid of it. She had 15 to 25 years to like drag it down the stairs.
But I guess like always know where it is. It's not like someone's going to discover it. You know what I mean? Like, in the sense that, like, if you leave it in, like, the ground of your old apartment, eventually someone might accidentally dig it up. Yeah.
Yeah. I was on, like, Reddit and shit looking at this case, other people's theories, and some people were like, oh, she was probably selling his organs to, like, pay for her dresses shit. I was like, that's a bit of a reach. I'm not positive that Doreen had access to the black market.
You know what it kind of makes me think of? Like, I'm so terrible at, like, I reference, like, so many things. But it makes me think of that story from, like, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark of the girl with the green ribbon. It's like that dark secret that, like, nobody's ever allowed to go into her trunk. But instead it's like, that girl, it's like... You untie the ribbon, her head falls off.
I'm not gonna lie, honestly, I would love to see this into like, I would love to see this portrayed as like an A24 movie, because there's in my mind there's something so cinematic about like a woman going through her clothes and dresses to look for something to wear for a dead friend coming across. To just like mentally, just imagine having that just sit in your head, and not only sit in your head, but sit in your apartment.
My anxiety would be through the roof.
Like, it reminds me of a case that we actually covered of Andre Melendez.
Oh, yeah.
He was known by as Angel, and he was a part of, like, the club kid scene in New York at the time. And, like, kind of very, like, a lot of overlap between those two communities of, like, you know, drag performers and, like,
party kids.
You know, party kids and the unfortunate violence that happened in so much of those communities. And also, quick shout out, Paris is Burning. You can find free copies of it on YouTube if you guys have never watched
it's
it before.
It's good. No, it's really good.
It's like a little documentary on a subculture that if you don't have any exposure to, like, that is as close up and personal as you can get to it.
That was our episode of Conspiracy. It was I liked it. It was a lot more laid back and stripped down.
I really like this episode a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I felt like the whole time I had to like defend that I'm not a crazy
person. Same.
You know?
Yeah, this is a no gaslighting zone. You're all right. You're safe here.
Just like, some people believe the CIA.
I'm not one of those people, but
there's so many disclaimers for this episode.
Yeah, for real.
I'm gonna have to preface this a lot of trigger warnings.
Ooh, yeah.
True. Beware of rabbit hole.
I just want to tell people, like, do not buy that book, please. If you can find a free copy, I don't care, but like, do not fucking pay for that book. Granted, they did.
Did you find it? Where'd you find it?
I had a friend whose father passed away, and I didn't know what it was. They were like, I'm giving away their books, so I took some of them and I saw this, and I had no idea what it was until last.
Can you send it to me in the mail?
Yes, I will finish it first, but
I'll pay for the shipping and I'll send it back.
Well, yeah, we come back and Battle has like bleached his skin.
No. Sammy Sosa, no.
Yeah. You see, like, he perms, he gets a perm and straightens his hair out. He turns into like normal SpongeBob. He's like, hey, how you doing? Yes. He's like, hey, how you doing?
Smooth SpongeBob, where he's like.
But yeah, I mean, I said before, I usually want to. Go ahead, Kelly.
I was going to say, the thing that I thought was interesting is that this only happened recently, I believe. It was actually after, I believe, the
insurrection.
Thank you. I was gonna say inauguration, but I was like, nope, that's not right. After the insurrection, Amazon stopped providing this book as something you could purchase. Only recently, though.
I don't give much praise to Jeff Bezos, but
no.
Oh no, no.
It was a PR team, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that was our episode. You know, normally, like I said in previous episodes, I would want to like end with like an organization to shout out. But this is a conspiracy thing. It just feels weird. But, like, I don't think there's any organization supporting healthy conspiracy theories. All I'll say is, you know, if you have HBO Max, watch that QAnon documentary. It's really good. Me and Battle were talking about it the other day. But yeah, no, that was the episode. Check out the Patreon. If you want to support the show, check us out on social medias and enjoy the music coming up.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
Time now for your latest weather forecast.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale. For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Wondering if thousands of miles away, the sky's just as blue. It's as if I'm stuck in yesterday when I'm thinking of you. 'Cause when you have your morning coffee, I'm turning out the lights so I could dream. And when you smile through the screen, I wish you could be with me. So I lay my head to rest when the sun is rising. I'll start a brand new day when the moon is shining. I long to be with you in all the places you have been. So today I am time traveling. Da-da-da-da. Oh, today I am time traveling.
And every time that you closing your eyes, I will be beside you, and my heart will glide across the miles to fly right to you. 'Cause when I dive into the traffic, the echo of your voice is all I hear. I'm never tired of your laughing so far, but ever so near. So I lay my head to rest when the sun is rising. I start a brand new day around the moon. It is shining. I long to be with you in all the places you have been. So today I am time traveling. So today I am time.
Time traveling. Oh, today I am time traveling.